Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. They're the birds for you, those of you who remember the birds. And even if you don't, you got to appreciate that kind of music. Joan Pride is somebody who appreciates that kind of music. She's probably not old enough to remember them, but I've told her about them, and she always likes it when I talk to her about music. Right, Joan?
Absolutely, always. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Joan. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kipling Editors. Joan, did you know that on this day in 1870, the 15th Amendment was ratified?
No, I did not. Of course, I don't remember what the 15th Amendment is. So.
Yeah, it granted the rights of citizens to vote, regardless of their race, color, or previous condition of servitude.
And what year was that?
That was 1870.
But not gender.
Exactly. I thought you'd pick up on that real quick. You've got great antenna there, Joan.
Yeah.
And isn't that something? But I thought, you would think that in those days that without, it also says our previous condition of servitude, you'd think that would have got the women, wouldn't you?
You would think, yeah. No, that's a good point.
See there?
Yeah.
And I'm sure Molly Hatchet and all those other ladies, wasn't that the name?
Molly Hatchet was a rock group.
What was the lady's name who was the big Susan B. Anthony? She was the big suffrage person.
She was one of them,
But it was like, what was it like, 40 years later, 50 years later almost, before women got the right to vote?
It was in the 20th century, I know that.
Yeah, it was like 50, 40
years
later. It
was after 1910, I think, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's wrong with that picture, huh?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Plenty.
and also, Joan, one other thing. On this day in 1913, the 16th Amendment was ratified. And that was the one that gave the government the right to charge or to collect income tax.
Oh, boy.
That was a black day in the history of America.
That's a big one.
Hey, Joan, let's get into the letter and talk a little bit about some of the campaign promises that Kiplinger says, one of them in particular, that Kiplinger says that Mr. Bush will not be able to keep. And he mentioned it again last night, Joan.
Well, that's right. And this lead is really about deficit, the budget and deficits. And I think the president had said that he wanted to cut the deficit in half by 2009. Now,
right.
The problem with that is it's a moving target. And I think at this point it's well over $400 billion.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying, I guess, we're going to be seeing deficits between $350 billion and $425 billion for the next, at least in the next couple of years. That is, if nothing changes.
Right, right. Well, he wants to cut that in half. He wants to cut it in half by 2009, and of course that's the year he will leave office, right?
Correct.
That the new president will be sworn in the early part of 2009. So he's saying in his second term he's going to do that. But Joan, if I were interviewing him, and he brought that up to me, I would say, sir, how are you going to do that if you don't know how to veto anything?
Well, that's
because in 4 years, over 4 years now, he's never vetoed a bill, to my knowledge.
Well, he's in his second term now, so maybe that will make things different.
Right. Well, now one thing he talked about last night that I think is important to mention, that is part of his plan to cut the deficit. He said that there may be as many, and I'm trying to remember and paraphrasing him a little bit, hopefully not too poorly, that there may be as many as 150 agencies that are underperforming, we're not getting our money's worth out of them, that he wants to propose that we cut. He didn't mention which ones they were, but now that would go a long way, and that's not the same thing as vetoing a bill, is it?
Well, it would be interesting to see that list, to see who in Congress has a personal interest in keeping some of those agencies going.
I can't wait to see that list of oxen that may be gored. That would be an interesting thing to see, wouldn't it?
Sure would.
So you're expecting deficits to run between $350 and $450 billion, and that's each year?
For at least a couple of years, yes.
Each year is going to be that much of a shortfall, which all that accumulates, right?
Right.
and that's roughly 3% of GDP. But shouldn't we point out that this is not, that that's really about half of as much as with relative to GDP as we had, say, 25 years ago?
Right. And once you get up to, I guess, 6%, which they ran under Reagan, then you're really worried. 3%, it's not great, but it's not as bad.
Right. Well, and also, and doesn't it also depend on what the deficits are being caused by? If the deficits are being caused by things that are promoting economic growth or for defense or things like that, aren't those seen to be acceptable deficits, more acceptable, I should say?
Well, acceptable in what way? They're not economically acceptable.
Well, no, I agree with you. No,
you mean politically acceptable?
Well, yeah, I guess so. I guess that's the way I mean. In other words, if we're just spending money on things that are just out of control, which I think we are a lot of that, but I guess my point is some of these deficits I still think were arose because of the 9-1-1 situation.
Well, that may be, but the problem is the biggest part of our overspending has to do with entitlements and interest on the debt.
Right. Which is a self-fulfilling prophecy,
right,
with the deficits, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you could cut out, I keep saying this, you could completely cut out domestic discretionary spending and you'd still have a problem.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, the big entitlement problem is not even Social Security, is it? In terms of the deficit.
Well, it's Medicare and Medicaid.
That's right.
But
those
Medicare are the big one.
That's the big one. And that's the reason why people who are not so much in favor reforming Social Security or changing Social Security, they keep pointing to Medicare, don't they?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
So here's what I've always wanted to see, Joan, is whenever some of these people, like typically Democrats, who say, we don't need to change Social Security, why aren't you focusing on Medicare? I've always wanted to see a little exchange there where the president would turn and say, okay, forget Social Security. What are we going to do about Medicare? I'd like to see if the Democrats back down or not.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're saying we don't need to fix it. I think they're saying there isn't an urgent crisis this minute, as the president is portraying.
Right. Well, and I think I agree with you, except that I think it's a matter of what we have here then is a matter of timing. The president says we should fix it now. The Democrats are saying we should fix it later.
Right.
And, I personally think that the timing of the president is better timing than the other ones, because we don't need to put it off for another day, in my opinion. It's 20 after. We'll be right back after these messages. We're going to talk a little supply-side economics right after these messages. Stay with us.
And the land is dark, and the moon is the only light we'll see.
That's Mr. Ben E. King, ladies and gentlemen. Great singer of yesteryear. Joan Pryde doesn't remember him either, do you, Joan?
Benny King, no.
That's Ben E. King, by the way.
Right, Ben E. King.
Joan Pryde, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, also our music critic on the show. Joan, let's get back into what Mr. Bush has to do to rein in the runaway spending. You know, Joan, and I've said this before, but it's something that I really kind of noticed in the last year or so, last couple of years, I guess I should say. The big spending party has nothing to do with political ideology. The big spending party is whichever one's in control.
That sure looks that way these days, yeah.
The Republicans, in terms of spending, the Republicans have kind of become Democrats, haven't they?
Right.
And since the Democrats haven't changed their ways, we're out of control with regard to spending, aren't we?
Well,
and we got a president that doesn't know how to wield a veto pen.
Yeah.
And so,
scary.
So basically, we're screwed, aren't we, John?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
So, well, the thing is that we'll see. I think you're right. I think we shall see what we shall see, and we'll see if Mr. Bush, how serious he is about reining this thing in. But one of the things that you guys point out, that Kiplinger points out, is that Mr. Bush probably won't have as much luck in cutting getting the government off of the spending trough as he will in having maybe more of an opportunity to expand revenue. Now, tell us about that. Are you going to give us a lesson in supply side economics now, Joe?
That's right. Well, as we said, that Congress is still going to want to be spending, but what I think Bush is going to try to do is get the economy growing faster. And if that happens, then you'd be pulling in more revenue, and you could reduce the deficit that way.
Isn't that basically one of the big things that happened in the 90s that helped to eliminate the deficit? It was also a tax increase, but wasn't the economic expansion of the 90s, didn't that really contribute tremendously to actually creating a surplus?
Well, yeah, I think the receipts that came in also, I think it was a lot of it was capital gains and things like that. The investment, mm-hmm. Taxes on investment was a lot of it.
Well, and of course, that's the good news. And if we can have this expansion, I mean, I think you guys make an excellent point here, and I'm glad you did, that you brought this out, that there really are two sides to this equation. There is the relative, number of amount of spending that we make, whether that's cut or not. But then there also is the opportunity for, it's sort of like when two guys are playing golf against each other and one guy's behind, you know, two things could happen to cause the guy who's behind to win. And that is the other guy could shoot a higher score and come down. And the second guy could shoot a better score and go up. So
I've never seen deficits compared to golf before. That's interesting.
Well, you're like
a golfer.
You got to come to the Small Business Advocate Show to get these things, Joan.
Yeah.
Nowhere else do you get these kinds
of
point analysis. You know, that's what I call it. Okay, but you guys also point out, Kiplinger also points out, that the deficits are going to take a toll. And tell us what some of the dangers are in that, Joan.
Well, we say that interest rates will rise,
mm-hmm.
and
because
government borrowing will crowd out private borrowing.
We saw that in the 80s, didn't we?
Right. And then when you have more money going for debt, we're saying that there's less for other programs such as schools and roads,
yep.
and those are things that boost the economy as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and schools and roads, that's some of that government spending that I was talking about earlier, that even if it's a deficit, it's good for the economy. But no, you're right. And I remember very well, Joan, in the 80s when we had such high deficits, and also that it was helping to drive interest rates up because the government was competing with the private sector for loan dollars, weren't they?
Right. That's true.
So that is going to take a toll, especially at a $350 to $425 billion dollar a year clip. That's what is it Mr. Dirksen said once, Joan?
Oh, a million here and a million there, and it finally ends up to being real money.
Yeah, I think he said a billion here.
Yeah,
that eventually it becomes real money. Joan, let's move over and talk about let's talk a little bit about healthcare. And there's some new drug rules out there that you've been reporting on. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, as you know, the Medicare prescription drug benefit is moving along. It really becomes effective the beginning of next year. But there are rules in place now for employers, and the whole idea is that they can get a subsidy if they continue to provide drug coverage to their retirees or start providing it. But they have to be able to show that what they're providing is better than, I should say, as good as or better than the Medicare prescription drug benefit.
So this is where the government is going to subsidize a company by 28% if they provide drug coverage for their retirees.
The idea is to keep them from dropping their coverage.
I see, and then going. I see what you mean. All right, well that's an interesting thing. I'm not sure how many people that'll fit, but it might fit some of our small businesses. Stand by, 29 after. We're going to be right back. We got more to come with our good friend Joan Pride after these messages. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Stop me if I never stop.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining us. If you just tuned in, you've been here with us for a while today. Thank you for that, too. We appreciate it very much. And Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kipling Editors. And it's always, she keeps telling me over and over again what a dream come true it is for her to be here with me. And Joan, I know it is. And I appreciate you telling me that all the time.
No problem.
Over and over again. I get tired of hearing it sometimes.
I'm sorry.
Joan.
I'll stop.
Okay. All right. Hey, Joan, let's talk a little bit more about health care. And what is this news about states helping employers provide health care coverage?
Yeah, I know. This is new. The idea is to help them afford the low-income workers. So, sharing the cost for the premiums that employers might not otherwise be able to pay for those workers, or the workers would not be able to pay themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good news, and I'm not sure. Do we know how to plug into that? Do we need to contact? How would we contact by the way, you identify some states have some kind of premium assistance. Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, we got a great station up in Taunton. Utah, Rhode Island, Idaho, Illinois, Michigan, we got some folks up in that part of the world too, listening.
New York and Arizona,
Arizona
too.
Right, is some reinsurance. We got some good stations in that part of the world too. And Maine and New Mexico will try direct subsidies to cover the working uninsured. And so we got folks listening in those states. So maybe some of the – I'm not sure. What would we do, Joan? Would we contact our state insurance department or maybe the human resources division of the government?
I think one thing I would do is contact one of my state legislators, because you're their constituent, and they should be able to help you find out that information so that you're not going through the maze of state agencies yourself.
You know, another thing, Joan, they could do, maybe the quick phone call would be to call the Chamber of Commerce and ask them what they know about it. I bet somebody at the Chamber of Commerce knows about this.
Yeah.
And if they don't, they ought to. That'd be a good project for you to give them today, wouldn't it, Joan?
Oh, absolutely.
Joan, bringing a little bit of the President's State of the Union into this discussion, last night I was very pleased and very proud of him for bringing up the Association of Health Plans. Did you hear him say that?
Oh, he did, yes. I just caught a brief mention of that.
That's very important, because Association of Health Plans, and I'll just do my little soapbox here, folks, real quick. That's where small businesses are able to gaggle together in groups across state lines, buy insurance across state lines. And, Joan, as you know, that's where we're stuck in so many places, because so many state insurance departments, they don't allow people to buy across state lines for insurance. And the Association of Health Plans, as a federal bill, would allow that, and it would allow small business owners through their chambers, through their trade groups, to be able to buy insurance together in large groups the way large companies and unions do, and save a lot of money. And I was really pleased. That's the first time in my knowledge, in my memory, Joan, that a president has specifically mentioned the Association of Health Plans.
Wow.
And so I hope that's really going to give some visibility to that. That's one of the best things that could happen to small business. Joan, let's move down and talk a little bit about the farming issue. Now I know about phishing, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. That's where people try to steal your identity by pulling a ruse on you online. But this is farming with a P-H. Tell us about that.
This is interesting. Raising genetically altered plants that create proteins that you need for prescription drugs. Mm-hmm. And that one of the great things here is that it's cheaper than what the usual process is, which is extracting these proteins from animals.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, but you know, I would call this biotech. Is that not, could you not consider this biotech?
Yes, but this is our way of turning a phrase, I think.
I know.
Farming
I'm not arguing with your farming thing. I like that. I actually like that. But wouldn't you think that this is also and here's why I'm saying this. In terms of the next killer app, a lot of people have said biotech is going to be the next killer app. And I wonder if this is an offshoot of that. In other words, more leverage for the biotech
industry. Oh, I see. Right.
It seems to me that farming, pH farming like this would be something would be very close to, they would be very much connected to the biotech, the whole biotech industry.
Sure.
Joan, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the Kiplinger folks produced an outstanding document in their letter this week. And it talked a little bit about inflation. I'm going to get Joan to cover that with us a little bit right after these messages. It's 10 till. I'm sorry, 20 till. We'll be right back. We're back at 17 till. A little Fleetwood Mac for you there. Mrs. Stevie Nicks on vocals. Joan Pride on backup, by the way. Right, Joan?
I wish.
Go ahead.
Now, that's a pretty good song. And,
see?
And it was produced after 1960.
Now, Joan, don't be tacky. I know that's hard for you, but try not to be tacky. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors and our chief song critic. Actually, she's more the gym critic around here. Joan, your website is the one that I really encourage my audience to go to, and I want to thank you for I know you personally work so hard on the website to make it all that it is. And folks, I hope you'll go to kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R. .com and check it out and find out what they have to offer. A lot of free stuff there, but also you can subscribe to their outstanding documents that they publish every month, including the weekly Kiplinger letter, which is now in its 82nd year, and that comes every week on Friday by email or on Monday in the mail. And then also the three biweekly letters, the tax letter, the California letter, the agriculture letter. And then once a month, there's something else that comes out, isn't it, John?
That's right. It's a magazine called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Yeah, we all know about that one, and that's been around 50-something years, and it's also available on newsstands if you're roaming around and you're looking for some good information on investing and just life in general, really financial life in general. But you know, Joan, if they were subscribing to the newsletter, to the Kiplinger letter, I should say, this week, they would have gotten an extra little something, a special tracking inflation edition, a little two-pager. That is pretty handy. You guys do this every year, Joan. What I like about it is on the second page, folks, it's got an outstanding graphic showing what the, and Joan's turning to hers right now, you can hear, showing the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, and how it's been tracking month over month for the last 25 years. Joan, this
probably
is
more than you ever wanted to know
it's about a little bit more
CPI.
Than I wanted to know, but what the news is that last, in 2004, the CPI was up about almost double from 1.9 in 03 to 3.3 in 04. And, of course, a lot of that, Joan, was the price of fuel.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And also, and then, which I still say is going to remain high. And but you guys say in here that it's not going to be up as much, only to about 2.5% in 2005.
Right.
So that's pretty much your inflation rate, folks, that Kiplinger's predicting. So if
now that's a little more than we've been used to, but it's still not mm-hmm. bad.
Well, and it's not anything we can't deal with.
Right.
So, but here's the thing, Joan. I think the news here, and you guys, we're going to move over and talk about the Fed in just a second. We might as well go ahead and do that now. Actually, the Fed raised rates a quarter of a point this week to what, 2.5?
Yes.
I think it's 2.5.
I think so.
And I believe if they agree with you, if they get their news from you about inflation, which is going to be 2.5 this year, I believe they won't stop. And I predicted this. They won't stop until it gets to at least 3, which is a half point, as I predicted, above the inflation rate.
Ah.
So they got 2 more raises to go minimum.
Okay.
And I'm sure that they're poring over this special inflation tracking report of Kiplinger's right now up there at the Fed.
Joan. I would hope so.
Well, they called me and told me that. Yeah,
they just, did. I mean,
oh
yes, I'm excited.
It's everywhere.
Wow.
Up there. Joan, let's move on down and talk about what's this business about curbing Social Security numbers? I thought Social Security numbers were a handy way to identify people.
Well, they were, and what we're saying is it's too bad that you can't still do that, but a lot of states are reducing the use of Social Security numbers, mainly because it gets a person's Social Security number out in the public domain a little too easily. For example, my driver's license has my Social Security number on it. That's considered my state identification number.
Right.
And I've never really understood why they do that. I mean, I understand that it's easier to connect me with my Social Security number, make sure they know who I am, but that number is so precious, you don't want it getting into the wrong hands.
You know, Joan, I was just looking. My Social Security number is not on my driver's license. That kind of surprises me.
Oh,
but
okay.
But which it makes sense for it not to be on my driver's license. But this creates if we're not prohibiting, but we're minimizing the use of Social Security numbers. That's an important way to track people to check on people who, for example, we're going to hire to find out what they've been up to.
Right.
That kind of thing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you've got a child going to a child care center, you want to know that they've checked out the people who are working there, don't you?
Well, that's true. Yes.
So this is a
problem. We're also talking about we're in a time of a lot of identity theft.
Right.
And if you get someone's Social Security number, boy, that's an entree to who knows what.
So basically, what we're talking about here is Social Security terrorism, Social Security number terrorism. Aren't we?
Well, yeah,
we got bad guys.
That's a way to
bad
put it.
Guys eliminating the productive use of something, like the conveyance of public conveyances and things like that. It's another form of terrorism in a way, isn't it?
Well, I guess you could put it that way.
Well, that's the kind of the way my mind works, Joan. As you
know. We know that.
Speaking of terrorism, Joan, let's move over to page 3. If they don't call me the king of Segway for nothing,
let's talk
about the next Homeland Security chief, Mr. Michael Chertoff.
Michael Chertoff, boy, does he have a job to do?
Yeah, you're right about that. That's a job. Yeah. I think I might rather be president than his job.
I was just reading about the Department of Homeland Security. It has pulled together so many different agencies with different missions and actions that it's sort of a behemoth. And we're also saying that there's a lot of money that hasn't been spent on what states need to do for terrorism. So that's going to be one of his first things he's going to have to get into.
Right, absolutely. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more. When we come back, I'm also going to let Joan give you the phone number where you can call Kiplinger and get a 30-day free trial. How about that? And how about this music to take us out?
How long has it been?
Little Joe Cocker, Hitchcock Railway for you there. We're not going to let Joe sing for a while. We've got some other things we've got to do. Like, I want Joan to tell us the phone number. Well, there's Joe. He's coming in a little bit there. I want Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, to tell us about the phone number, Joan, where they can call, where my audience can call and get the 30-day free trial of any of the publications that you guys offer. The weekly Kiplinger letter, the 3 biweekly letters, agriculture, tax, and California, or the magazine. 30-day free trial, folks, at this phone number.
That's right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
So I hope you'll check that out. And also, you can do that 30-day free trial thing, by the way. You can do that on the website at kiplinger.com. Joan, and by the way, folks, you can find Kiplinger and Joan all over my website. They're not my sponsors. I'm just proud to tell you about them because I think they do good work. And there's actually a little Kiplinger corner on my homepage, and that's at jbsba.com. And I hope you'll subscribe to my free newsletter. I'll give you a 12-month free trial on that one, Joan. How about that?
Gee.
Let's get back to Chertoff for a minute, the new director of Homeland Security. The government has spent $6.3 billion for state security needs, but there's almost that much more that hasn't been spent yet. What's wrong?
$5.2 billion hasn't been spent. Well, we're saying it's stuck in the pipeline.
Yeah.
So what? But he already has plans to let cities borrow the money faster if they have an imminent threat.
Right. Well, he's got to, hopefully he'll be, that'll be good for business. And I know a bunch of folks who are in the Homeland Security business. They're in the business of Homeland Security, including our good friend Jim Gilmore, former governor of Virginia, Governor Jim Gilmore, formerly your governor, who actually has a trade group now for helping companies to get access to that money. So he'll be happy to, I'm sure he's going to be happy to hear about Mr. Chertoff. Joan, let's move down and talk about innovative packaging. Now, this is pretty interesting, Joan. We're going to be able to get beer bottles, aluminum beer bottles, not aluminum beer cans, but aluminum beer bottles, you say, in different shapes and sizes. And you think people think that's going to help people buy more beer? Oh, look at the cute bottle. Let me buy a beer.
That's what we're saying. We're saying there's going to be eye-catching graphics on these things. And I don't know. Well, sometimes people buy things because they look pretty.
Well, I think they buy wine bottles because of the label.
I think they do.
The research has been shown that the label,
yes,
or the unique shape of the bottle or something like that.
Yeah.
But the one I like here, Joan, is in this new packaging section, is about the talking packages.
Well, I can't even imagine that.
Here's the deal. I'm imagining that I walk up to a bag of Oreos and start popping those puppies open, and the bag says, "Lay the cookies down and step away from the table."
Away from the bag.
Step away from the table.
You know what's good for you.
We don't want to have to hurt you. My daughter called me the other day and said one of her nieces is selling Girl Scout cookies, and she said, "How many do you want? How many Thin Mints do you want?" She knows I love Thin Mints, and I said, "How many will they let me have?" I hope there's no talking packages in the Girl Scout cookies, Joan. But talking packages, how about that? What's that going to do? Instructions or what?
We're saying cooking instructions, health tips, other information, maybe the nutritional label telling you how much fat is in there, that kind of thing.
So what I want to see is the package that has the cooking instructions, and when the woman opens it, sounds like her mother-in-law telling her how to cook. How about that? Huh?
You could come up with some pretty good commercials.
I could have some fun with this stuff,
yeah.
You know, Joan?
Right.
I could wreak some real havoc, I think, on this stuff.
You could.
Joan, we already talked about the Fed. Let's move down and talk a little bit about Iraq.
All right.
And Iran. Mr. Bush, did you hear what he said last night to the Iranians?
No, I didn't.
He said, and if you're in Iran, and he basically singled out Iran. He says, if you're in Iran and you want your own freedom, we will stand behind you. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but not too much.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never heard a president say something like that in a State of the Union speech.
Hmm.
How about that?
Wow.
Pretty bold, huh?
Pretty bold.
It'll be interesting. I don't know how that'll manifest itself. But
yeah.
Joan, weren't you proud, regardless of all the politics, which side of anybody's on, you got to be proud of the Iraqis for dipping their finger and branding themselves as voters, and then knowing this is going to take a week to wipe off to wear off the ink of their fingers after they voted.
Right.
Wasn't that an amazing demonstration of courage by millions of people?
Well, sure, because they were risk. We don't risk our lives in this country to vote, and they did. It's pretty sad that
they made us look small when we compare their numbers to our numbers, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good for the Iraqis. I am proud of them. Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Don't forget that 30-day free trial, too. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and you know, this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.